Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, your drive time duo, your drive time show here on Eagle FM, as always, Monday to Friday, keeping you company until the hour of 6, that is from 4. So we take it up from here until the hour of 6, so you'll just be listening to us and what we have for you on the menu for today. Dwight?
So, this is a particular, it is another philosophic question also, because it's up to everybody, but primarily, we in Namibia, we're obviously trying to make things as, you know, as, accessible as possible. If you've seen our poster for today, dear listeners, the whole discussion is about, access to information, but this comes through from a recent conversation that aimed to bring in a discussion or a dimension of what do you see for you as a Namibian to make decisions upon, to act upon information that is set out to help you. For example, some of the things that Helmut and I also do here, you know, we, I don't want to say that we're doing a public good, but we're doing a good to the public, you know, giving a ton of information in some cases, and or even merging other sets of information into the presentations that we always do. But the particular conversation starts from a dimension that was pretty broad. Now, what is interesting, Helmut, obviously, that this comes from a public, almost like a public discussion. It was public, basically, but it was something based upon where, two foremost experienced Namibians, that being Mr. Herbert Jauch and Mr. John Nakuta. And then the third was obviously a representative from the Ministry of Information Communication Technology, that being the Deputy Director Ugulu. I'm trying to remember the pronunciation, but it's W-G-U-L-U. So, in terms of the conversation, the question, the hypothesis was pretty straightforward. Should access to information be considered like, you know, like a human right to achieve social justice? I'm summarizing it because that was what the overall conversation also took place or was based upon. And it's an interesting dimension, Helmut, because after we brought in the Access to Information Act itself back in end of 2022, it tries to meet certain particular needs in the Namibian realm. Now, let me also sort of like factor in an experience that I thought would be a newsworthy event. It was not a newsworthy event. I shared it with, obviously, with, you know, with our supervisor here, with Ivan, just telling him, hey, listen, Ivan, this particular thing that I went to at the NSA had is no news thing. They're technically asking us, how does the website function for you, Dwight, as a media representative? For me, the NSA's website, and I'm not promoting the NSA, but the NSA's website is one of the best resources in this country because it has a whole bunch of data sets, data reports, sectoral reports, various other kinds of reports about Namibia and Namibia's particular profile as a country. So it's wonderful. There is obviously a lot more that we need to help us understand what's happening in Namibia. So this means other things, other data sets, other information sets, probably also has to be processed by the NSA. But currently, and that was an engagement where I was the only media representative. There were academics there, meaning there were lecturers there from institutions. There were representatives from the private sector investment scenario, as well as also people from other agencies who rely on information from the NSA. Now, when you started from that particular question in terms of knowing what's happening in Namibia, because Helmut, if you open up a Google search right now, just like you're doing right now, you will easily get information sets from other countries in the world. You will easily get unique things. For example, how is it possible that a country like Namibia cannot participate in the global population trend analysis that has been happening for the past 3 years? You know, when people are talking about birth rates, death rates, and the correlation, or sort of like the connecting element between the birth rate, death rate discussion taking place, is the replacement rate, meaning the rate of children being born for every person passing away in a country. And they always look at how many children are born per woman. And these particular indicators obviously helps to sort of like set, for national planning purposes, it helps to set the agenda in terms of what's the budget going to be, what needs to be invested in, how many schools you'll probably need to build when, how many hospitals you need to build where, how many nurses you'll need, so on and so forth. Up until the day, everything that I'm talking to you about there in terms of Namibia's particular demographic future, in terms of birth rate, death rate scenario, I've not seen, except for the labor force survey and the last census, the last two, those two documents together, because the one is extrapolated from the other. They're the only ones, but they also make a vague statement. The vague statement being, we know that we grew by 900,000 Namibians from 2.1 million in 2011 to 3 million on the dot. We knew we grew by 900,000 Namibians. We know that households multiplied, but households became smaller. Mm-hmm. So we had 4 people on average, but smaller in 2011. And in 2023, we have more households, but smaller in size. Yeah. So we know these are the particular sort of like pointers to work from, especially when you start from population demographics. Now, access to information also would be then the various nuances, Helmut, that you would have to go and factor in. For example, look at any subject matter, and then you try to look at how much information exists on each subject matter.
Yeah.
There is, however, a very interesting thing that came out from that public discussion, which I also contained in the article, which was the discussion about the discussion about where Mr. Nakuta highlighted specifically that back in the 2018 land conference, people requested information from the Ministry of Lands at the time, the Ministry of Agriculture or Ministry of Lands at the time. They requested how many people were resettled under the resettlement farm process, a program, and who, you know, and what particular impacts or particular benefits did these people achieve through this particular program? You know, did the goals of the program, were they met through the activity of resettling people who required resettlement farms? And the comment that was given was that, you know, do you actually want to try and destabilize the country just by knowing the set of information, which is, in hindsight, when you look at that particular experience, and the people that asked for this information were civil society organizations to participate at this land conference. And if you think about it in hindsight, you go like, but it's a resource. A resource is a fact. You know, you can't hide that there's a farm there. Okay, maybe if you're in Australia, you can hide a whole espionage facility in the Western Desert there of Australia.
No one is going to see it.
Well, the people in the town close to the facility knows it exists. But the thing is, if you try and look for this facility on like Google, yeah, even on Google Photos, on Google satellite photos, you can see this facility from space.
No, I don't think. There's a town that has more underground facilities than on the surface facilities. And this is, it's not that there's something nefarious about it. It's also based in Australia. It's just that the town has just a very few structures on the surface, but a lot of their facilities are found underground. That's because of the scorching heat of the, it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they did that specifically because, like you said, the heat during the day. But then here's another thing also specifically, just as an example. I recently stumbled upon a very interesting thing regarding secret cities that Russia has. Now, these
secret cities?
Yeah, you'll be surprised. These cities were built, Helmut, literally between Stalin's time and like 1980-something. These were cities that contained the best researchers, scientists, and all that. And they built these. It's like a small city. They build these cities with an access road. But if you're on the highway, the way that access road turns off from, you would not know that this road that turns off to something. You just probably
that there's an urban area somewhere where the road leads.
Yeah. And these I can't even call them communes because they have schools, they have hospitals, you know, they've got the basic facilities there. But it's just everyone there. Mm-hmm. Works for the government, and everyone there works on a specific project. These secret cities. So these secret cities are like these urban installations that the Soviet Union constructed specifically so that these best researchers can continue with classified work.
Can be
work.
In close proximity to their work environments or something.
Sometimes, sometimes not.
Basically, somewhat to some degree, the same thing that we have done here by establishing a mining, more like a residential areas just right next to a mining facility.
Yeah. But you know about the mine. Imagine
these ones are...
Imagine these are thousands of people that just live in the middle of nowhere and you don't know they live there.
So in other words, it's like you driving from Windhoek, Usakos, or wherever you're coming from to go to Swakop and Valvis Bay, but there's this road that branches out that goes to Arandes, but
there's no sign that says Arandes.
That
here.
Says Arandes or what is on the other end of that road.
Yeah, you don't know. But you'll also not be permitted to turn off there because sometimes in some scenarios these settlements were hidden.
Yeah.
Now, you won't find those settlements on any Google map. You can go and search Google Maps, Helmut, for these secret cities. You won't find them. Specifically because obviously the aim was literally, to do certain particular work for certain particular government initiatives. Now, we're obviously also not in Russia or in the late Soviet Union. We are in a modern day Namibia. Yeah. And the discussion that comes forward for national development purposes are key discussions. For example, in some scenarios, the if you have to look in hindsight, let's for example talk about the land conference of 2018.
Yeah.
In hindsight, if you look at it and you try to ask yourself what impacts emanated from the land conference, not many Namibians will know that this thing even happened in 2018.
Mm.
Not many Namibians will even know that the first one took place, I think it was in the 90s.
91, 92, somewhere there.
Yeah, the first one took place back then. The first one's aim was trying to deal with what the South African authorities didn't want to entertain was the genocide discussion.
Yeah.
The first one's aim was to try and deal with the genocide discussion.
So that was a no-go subject for the apartheid regime.
Yeah, it was also the same scenario where if you speak to anyone who knew, the South Africans didn't entertain this thing of traditional authorities even.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. South Africans just went and said, you are a citizen of this territory. You are in Southwest Africa.
Yeah.
That's it. There is no this and no that and no this. So that particular discussion also of traditional authorities was something the South Africans didn't entertain. Even though the South Africans were conducting that Bantustan situation, which technically, if you looked at it, sounds like what the Americans were doing with the Native American reservations.
Yeah.
These are people that can't get passports, but they would need the pass system to enter and exit things. But here's the thing.
That's basically, Palestine, Israel today.
True, but here's the thing, Hamoud. It's as if the people were told, yeah, we will give you your land. You cannot be a country on your own because you're in these borders and you can't do this and you can't do that. Yeah. But then you have the weird things of Lesotho and Eswatini, who under the South Africans technically were already constituted like countries.
Yeah, like sovereign...
In inverted commas. And Botswana also, which was a protectorate under the British, technically already a country in its own right. So, yeah, you know, the templates are a bit weird. But if we now come from 1990 this way, and we're still on the talking point of, you know, whether or not goals were met from the land conferences itself. I mean, some of the basic things for decisions to be made would have been access to information. Now, there were rumors back with the second land conference in 2018 yeah. that a whole bunch of people tried accessing certain particular sets of information at the National Archives here.
The National Library.
Yeah, here at the National Library. And coincidentally, that particular section of the National Archives was sort of like closed off for the same week, the week before and the week during the National Land Conference, when the conference was taking place, which was very weird because people actually wanted to access certain particular files regarding, you know, the claims or positions they wanted to make regarding, you know, the discussion of land that was, you know, obviously lost during the genocide period or Namibia's colonial history. So that's one silo, because I'm positioning that as a silo, Helmut. The next is obviously when you look at things, for example, like what you and I regularly experience in terms of everyday Namibians. Do they know about the developments happening in the country, and how have they been kept abreast? Because if you are hearing specifically that there's, you know, there's oil being explored, like what I saw 2 years back, specifically with some people that I met, they thought they were actually going to get jobs on firstly the oil rigs and secondly on at the green hydrogen facilities across the country. Mm-hmm. But mind you, when you ask a few questions in terms of did you finish school, do you have a background in this, do you have experience in this, and they tell you, no, they didn't finish grade 10, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, and then you sit there wondering, it's in now, how does this person get incorporated into this national objective? Now, this makes things a little bit more tricky.
Yeah.
Why I say it makes things a little bit more tricky is the discussion of who told these individuals that there are opportunities for them as unskilled Namibians in certain national industrial developments. Then there's a third one in terms of knowing, do people really know specifically, for example, what their local authorities, local councillors, regional authorities are meant to do in the broader scheme of things of national development? Do they know these things? Because I'm positioning the three particular sets of information, because obviously Mr. Nakuta's example, I borrowed it a little bit because it was very interesting to hear from, you know, first-hand experience of people as from civil society who wanted to know about information under a specific resource that should be a resource that's open to everyone, Helmut. Shouldn't be a resource that's closed off to for eyes only, ears only, and on and who is on a need-to-know basis. And then the third one, the second one is based upon what is currently happening, and then the third one is based upon the scenario of, you know, do people know the role that certain installations in their society play specifically to achieve certain particular goals? And it's these three particular things that actually you see every day. Obviously, it was dispensed in the public engagement by the three speakers. And the other one was specifically one based upon, there should be sort of like a background information for people to know about that these specific functions and installations, they have a specific purpose. They have it. I will motivate, obviously, later in the show, you know, why I keep hammering for the past 6-7 months now on local authorities and the regional authorities. It's because I believe these guys really need to pick up their socks. No, it's got nothing to do also with the minister Sankwasanizing Katima. Was it Katima? Let me just be honest. I just want to make sure. Was it Katima that he Sankwasanized?
Where the land was exchanged with the
Vurfobaki. Yeah. Okay. So it was Zambezi. Yeah. So it's not about that, but it's pulling back to his his famous induction workshop induction speech early this year for newly incoming counselors in Rundu. I'm piggybacking on that particular knowledge that he shared there. So yeah, so I'll leave it there for now. I'm just setting that particular template there for our listeners to understand when they have to look at information in the realm around them. And let me just, before I forget it, let me fill in this particular part. Let me fill in this part.
Yeah.
So this, the start where I referenced the NSA, you know, seeking insights from the broader Namibian template, meaning the stakeholders they engage with regarding information that they dispense to the broader country. So the after now finishing that engagement, I'm chatting with the consultant that the NSA brought in, this Norwegian guy from the Norwegian Statistics Authority as well. And I'm talking to this guy, and the other guy that comes from an investment house, that he's also a fellow Namibian, comes and stands, and we have this little bit, particular chat. And then I filled in something by saying, listen, you know what? I like what, you know, statistical authorities around the world do, because statistical authorities, they gather the necessary information, Helmut, that helps everybody know what's going on. And he highlighted this guy from Norway. He said literally what he referenced, what he realized specifically, like places in Africa and even in Norway itself, was that many times media companies don't like referencing where they got the statistics from. And then the statistics actually comes from this governmental institution, this statistics authority. And I stood there thinking, but you know, who does not reference someone else's work specifically if you didn't do the numbers crunching? Now, I told the guy, listen, I love, you know, reading up in these particular sectoral reports and stuff like that, because obviously for us in radio, it's very easy to, if you understand what is being said, you can carry the message over to an audience or to a readership or whatever. And the investment house guy here standing between us was like, yeah, it's important for us still, the experts, to be here so that we are part of the information dissemination channel. I'm like, what's a good say, Jay? What are you saying? So the funny thing was, this guy was literally, now he didn't know that the Norwegian guy was also a former journalist, né?
Yeah.
And I was now a current journalist. And the Norwegian guy, we are both looking at this guy going like, so you want to interpret the government's information that the government dispenses, né? But for us, the media, we need to have you interpret the information, which means I cannot read and I must not read and write. So I sit there thinking, like, what are wrong with these investment guys in Namibia? In some cases, this is not to bash on them as well, but in some cases, it's just funny how, for example, like in the IT space, you see it with the things that Elon Musk says, the things that Jeff Bezos said 2 weeks back about a UBI, is that they, it's not preaching, it's the other word. It's not even dictating. But before that, we've got an ad break. Get so
much more. You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg real good chicken, frozen mixed portions, only $99.99. And 2 kg marathon light brown sugar for a low $37.99. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Welcome back. We are 30 minutes into today's home run. Now, just finish a point before I, you know, come in.
My little tale of experiences.
Yeah.
So, Helmut. So I stood. Sometimes when you meet people in the broader scope of things in terms of this information engagement that we always do, and then you get, okay, listen. In some cases, a doctor will tell you, please don't go and self diagnose yourself from Google.
Yeah, don't do that.
Even though you can see the symptoms, sure. Yeah. But in some cases, it's also a little bit, you know, what they sometimes advocate for is literally, you know, always get as much, secondary, second opinions as possible.
Yeah.
second, third, fourth, 20th.
Yeah, and also I think when it comes to like medical diagnostics, I think the reason why I follow the advice of don't diagnose yourself using ChatGPT and Google is because I think a lot of symptoms of multiple diseases and conditions overlap. So when professional medical experts, or more like people that are basically experts that work in the medical line of work, every time, you know, when they are diagnosing you and I, they have to rule out, they basically start from a broad spectrum of what could be causing the problem.
Yeah.
And then cancel out all those things that does not fit the, you know, what they are observing until they narrow it down to the last culprit of what could be causing the problem. Yeah, I remember I went through about almost 30 different tests before it was narrowed down when I was diagnosed with essential tremor. I had to go back like multiple times. They said, well, it's not this, it's not this. So every time they said, it's not this, it's not this. So I was like, hang on a second. So you guys thought it was that. But, you know, part of me kept saying, well, thank God it's not that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they basically, I think it's about a game of elimination. Yeah. Rule out what doesn't fit what you're being, what you're observing. I think that's where diagnostics now becomes very difficult because you must be professional to know what to rule out and what to focus on.
And it's also a conversation, Almut, based upon, okay, not just the process of elimination, but also, for example, trying to understand who has privilege to information and who doesn't. And why this needs to happen. I watched a lovely particular thing specifically from the one of the economists that I love following, Richard Murphy, on his YouTube channel just, I think, back on Monday. And Murphy highlighted specifically that the premise for his discussion was that UK universities are facing a funding crisis, and specifically they are busy retrenching people. Academic staff, support staff, things like that. Sometimes universities in those countries have like a little health facility, and people are being retrenched. Now, the talking point that comes through from what he said there was literally also the kind of education system that is currently reigning, that is currently installed in the UK, what kind of person it's busy creating. Now, if people ask a question in terms of, okay, so what are we talking about? You know, what does this look like? Now, he highlighted specifically when a few years back he gave his students, because he's a professor of economics at the University of Sheffield in the UK. He gave his students an exercise to say, write an essay specifically of what you understand the work to be. Now, if at the UK level, which is obviously a country way older than Namibia, a professor identifies that there are people, young men and women, who can't write an essay, who can't make an argument for, and also highlight the argument against from the knowledge they've read, and then make their conclusion in terms of what they understand the work to be and what they support. Now, he said, people are not taught anymore how to write essays, apparently, on UK schools.
Eesh.
I'll say it again. It seems that people, he says literally, the UK education system, apparently they're not teaching people anymore how to write essays to make arguments for work that they read, to saying that they understood the work. Now, he obviously also cited specifically the deliberate policies of the UK government back then. That's now between 2008 to 2026. He highlighted the UK governments that were in office under the various prime ministers they had, from the reference from David Cameron all the way to, I think, the recent guy, the last three guys, Rishi Sunak being the last. So he highlighted specifically the kinds of education ministers they had, but they call them education secretaries. The education secretaries they had, and the particular impacts that the policies that these people came about to motivate. Now, if you see specific and you hear from someone that has practiced, studied, taught economics for 50 years and they tell you students in advanced programs under him can't write an essay. They're taught how to compute, do the calculations, but not to say whether or not they understand the calculations. Now that starts becoming a big thing, but that's an education thing, Helmut. That's an education thing. That's just the point that I want to make specifically. And sometimes why you would hear some experts in the Namibian economy tell you, yeah, but yeah, you know, we should still be the people that the media talk to before they go and read NSA reports. You can't tell.
Ish.
You can't tell someone.
Okay.
You cannot read by yourself. But yeah.
Okay. Starting from, let me just start from the very scary point you made about people thinking that you can just wake up, you know, at least in a few Namibians thinking that you can just wake up one day and land a job in the, you know, in extractive industry, especially the, you know, especially the oil sector.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very, you know, I want to blame, you know, okay, you know, I'll blame 70% the audience, 70% the audience and 30% the dispenser of much of this information, because much of them are coming out of political campaigns.
Definitely.
We will create, look, a political campaign is the worst source of information.
Yeah.
Yeah, because picture this. A political campaign, you know, before you start, and I'm not bashing on politicians here, but, you know, I know now political campaigns, they have to do it that way. They are basically marketing themselves.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't walk in a job interview and tell the interviewing panel how terrible you are, how you are always late, and how you always show up for work drunk. You are not going to, you'll obviously present this picture that will make them employ you.
Yeah.
What politicians do.
And you will always do the best to promote yourself to the best.
To the best of your ability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, because you know that if you told the truth about how terrible you are at your job, they will not hire you. But what you want is to be hired. A politician is pretty much the same way. What they want is to be elected. They are not going to tell you that the end goal of their career is to buy a Range Rover with a custom license plate.
Mm.
They will tell you, I will create employment, which is why that's one of the dumbest and a very vague point to make. You will create employment. The question that always comes in my head is, dude, you don't even own a tuck shop.
Yeah.
When you say you will create employment, you know, you really have to go deep. I'm not saying you cannot. What I mean is you will have to go in and explain which sector and where is the investment going to come from? Because, well, let's face it, you're broke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, otherwise you wouldn't be here.
Look, we shouldn't hammer the brokenness so heavy, Hamut. But that cricket match is it's a very obvious cricket match for many of us.
Yeah. No. Look, Donald Trump, when he was running for office, he told everyone he will make the Epstein files public, and then the Epstein files started coming out, and his name was mentioned in the files more than Jesus' name was mentioned in the Bible. And now you
I think it's more than 8,000 times, apparently.
You see, now you have problems. Now, well, him, you know, making that information public would be equal him shooting himself in the foot.
Yeah.
His association with Andrew, you know, with Jeffrey Epstein, with all the videos and all the pictures and all the information that made available out of the files, and his association again with Prince Andrew, all these things is damning ready. Now, but that's just how I think, coming back to politics, I will create employment. But let me just say, a political campaign is not a reliable source of information. I'm not saying don't listen. I'm just saying listen and take all that with a front loader of salt?
Front loader?
Yeah.
That's a lot, Helmut. I would actually call it an excavator.
You know, of salt. Now, let's just go back to, you know, let me just take us back to the point of information. Like information now, just to define terms, a very simple definition I found of information from Webster's dictionary is information is simply knowledge of a particular event or situation. is basically knowledge that you're gathering, whether it's, and this is a very broad definition. You're talking about knowledge of, take for example, if you want to cook, you will have to gather you first have to understand what recipes are you putting together, and that will depend on a specific dish that you'd like to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. The recipes that you need for, you know, for a Greek salad is not the same one that you need for steak. You need information, specific information. And that's the same thing goes for cooking, the same thing goes for waking, the same thing goes for mjolo. You can't just, well,
for what?
Nothing.
What?
No. When you show up in front of someone's daughter, you want to get their information. Yeah. You want to get the, you know, their phone number, their name. You want to get the, you want to get their likes, dislikes, what they're allergic to, so you don't poison them. All this, all this basically falls under the category of information. Now, when you look at just how broad the word information encompasses in terms of day-to-day human interactions, the answer to the question, should access to information be a human right, becomes a resounding yes. And that was just well basically framed, which is where I got much of much of the inspiration of our description from the United Nations explainer of how important information is. And that article was put up, they put that up last year on the 28th of September, which I had no idea, actually, until today, that it's an international day, or a day for universal access to information. And three things. Let's start with the UN. Now, actually, let me start with one of my favorite quotes on information from Amy Goodman, Democracy Now.
Yeah,
information is the oxygen for democracy. Now that is a very important point to make. Now, coming to the UN on the access to universal access to information celebration of 2025. This is what they wrote with regards to information. When citizens know truth, governments work better. When information flow freely, societies thrive. And when they when secrecy is replaced with sunlight, lives are saved. Credible information is a foundation for building trust and resilience. Now, I'm going to stop it. Because of the keyword I picked from there is credible information. Credible information is a foundation for building trust and resilience. Credible information. So, in a way that everything has a negative side, information also has a negative side. So, access to information is a good thing, but only if it's, we're talking about access to the right information, because access to the wrong information puts you into trouble, which is why a lot of people find themselves in front of the judge explaining explaining where they got the information they published about someone. We are talking about defamation of character here. Now, whatever information that you would like to put up about someone, you better hope it's in public sphere. Because if it's not, you better hope you can prove it. Yeah. And it's not in violation of their, of that individual's privacy. Because if it is, you're cooked. So, information, yes, it is. It is a right to, it is a human right. And one thing that was look at is, if you look at all the 17 sustainable development goals coming out of the UN, you can't talk about any of them without talking about gathering information. You can't. And, in pretty much the same way as an individual, you can't solve a problem you don't know. For you to solve any problem, whether it's personal problem or work-related problem, any type of problem, you first have to know much about that problem. That means gathering more information about that particular problem. Take unemployment, for example. If we want to tackle the unemployment problem in Namibia, we first have to know how many Namibians are unemployed. And if you want to tackle the housing problem in Namibia, we first have to gather information to know how many people have houses. Actually, we first have to define what is a house.
Yeah.
Otherwise, then I would just be telling you with my compassion that, okay, you know what? I'm good. I have a house. And when you look at this all 17 of the sustainable development goals coming out of the UN, no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education, gender equality, and all those, it all speaks to information. So when you just look at information from the from that angle, you begin to realize just how central information is and why accessing it is important, and why you know, the first thing you have to understand is yes, information is needed in all spheres of our lives. That's where it's now important to know what credible information is. And now that you know, credible information reference that was made by the UN was to some degree also referenced by Karen in their article in February, that was in 2024. They say, the article just reads as follows: access to accurate and timely information is a fundamental pillar of democracy and good governance. Now, it's a foundation. Accurate information and timely information is important for good governance. It takes us back to the UN's point of view of you need transparency if you want to build trust. You are in public office to represent the people. And if you are always hiding things from them, trust goes out through the window. And for them to trust you, you must give them access to information so they know what is going on. Because if they have, if they don't have access to the right information, chances are very high. And if they have no way of having this open conversation about specific, specific spheres of the country of what's taking place in this and that sector, where there is lack of information, of lack of access to information, chances are very high a lot of people will be making decisions based on the wrong information. And that is a bad idea. So when you look at it from a governance standpoint, from the 2024 article from Kren, from last year's article from the United Nations, it points to one, it basically paints one picture, which is you want the people under your governance to have access to information if you want to build trust. And trust is where trust lays the foundation of good governance. That then raises the question. That then raises another question. Then at this point, you don't have, things become somewhat of a gray area now that we are dealing with. It's not black and white. You can't say no to information. You can't say yes to all information. Let me explain saying the yes to all information. One thing that pilots are known for as well, thanks in part to Trevor Noah for exposing them, is when something goes wrong on a plane, they will not announce it all as it happens because they know you'd freak out. And now they will have to focus on solving the problem or landing the plane and calming you down. So they will just give you a picture that will make you calm so that they can focus all the attention on figuring out what's wrong with the plane so they can lend you a life. Now, if they gave you all the information about what is it that they are trying to solve with the plane and whether or not, what are the probabilities of you guys landing in one piece, what are the chances you'd freak out?
Big time.
Big time. Most likely you're going to freak out. And that's it. So I personally, and this is just from my personal perspective, and especially in terms of occupying public office, and especially in the office, like the highest office in the executive branch, that's the president's office, you have information that's coming in that you now have to filter now. How much can I share and how much can I not? It's sort of like being a father. Well, one thing I like about kids? Kids are very honest, brutally honest. They'll put you into trouble. They'll put you into trouble. Yeah. They'll just look at someone and go like, yeah. Are you standing in a hole? Because you really are short. But the thing is...
who are you? Who? Whose kids are you talking about? Let's ask that question.
No, there's this other movie that I watched where one guy looked at a short guy and said, "Where's the rest of you?" But the thing is, look, as a Tim Short, I found it funny. But if you are Tim Short and you don't find that funny, that's on you. But now, the way I picture basically running a country is like running a family as a parent. Kids will ask questions, and one of my favorite questions coming out of kids, coming from kids, is, "Where do babies come from?" Now, when your child asks that question, you can tell them the truth and the whole truth and traumatize them for life. Or you could just tell them the truth that their tiny brains are able to comprehend. I'm not saying Namibians have tiny brains, but basically the way that we react to some of the things, you can easily say that. Now, what do you tell the kids? Well, kids are from the hospital. We get them from the hospital. Just leave it there. They will grow out. They will grow up and figure everything out themselves. But of course, kids and fully grown citizens are two different things. So the very simple conclusion to draw from a question of should access to information be a human right? I'm with the UN guys on this one, and I'm with the Ukraine guys on this one. If you want a transparent governance. If you want a transparent, more like a stable government, you may want to be as transparent as possible. Because if you hide information, people will start formulating scenarios in their heads. And those scenarios, a lot of them have loud mouths, and they will be sharing that with anyone that could listen. The next thing you know, everyone has all kinds of wrong information. So for good governance, access to information, very important. At least that's according to Karen and the UN.
And it's also a discussion also of how people understand the developments happening around them also.
Yeah.
I mean, Helmut, it's also a question of do Namibians, for example, because we can only talk about Namibians, access the information that is available or exposed or made a, you know, position to everybody. Because if it's a scenario where you go home, you go talk to a bunch of people at home and they tell you, Helmut, where did you hear these things? Because the thing that knocks us and even me out of the ballpark sometimes is a question, is a discussion template of, if you ever meet that question, when someone asks you, how is it that you know this and I don't know?
Where did you get this?
Where did you get this?
Yeah. I'm not asking you to criticize you. I just need the source.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also not just the criticism thing. Sometimes the people will tell you, I don't know what you're talking about. Where did you hear this?
I have heard a bunch of the,
It's
that and mostly, how do you know all of this?
Yeah.
It's literally what I do.
I mean, then there's also the other disconnect. Do we have an ad break?
No.
Okay. Then there's also the other disconnect, specifically the one about what life was like for senior Namibians versus what life is like now for future coming Namibians. So I'm talking about people that are boomers and people who are now getting into finding a job, going to study, all those kind of things here in the middle. In their particular growing phases now. Back then, there was a whole lot fewer Namibians back then at independence. I think we were just a million. Just. We weren't even like 1.5. We were just a million. 900,000 something.
Jeez.
If you go find that data
holy
set.
Cow.
We were like 900 something thousand Namibians.
Yeah.
And obviously, 36, give or take, years later on, Namibia has almost now 3 million. So from 900,000, just close to a million, to 3 million shows exponential growth.
Yeah.
Way, a lot of growth. But when you had to look at resources being positioned for just, let's say, a million Namibians at the time, it was easy peasy. I mean, it was easy to do, Helmut. I mean, Back then, the people could earn like... I don't want to keep referencing that example of my uncle, but they could earn salaries that, you know, you couldn't even fathom for yourself in a modern day Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
You can't imagine someone earning literally 500 Namibian dollars and still being able to buy a car, have a couple of children, pay rent, and still have money left for disposable income. There's no way you can get that around your head, in your brain, right, about such a scenario.
In the 21st century?
Yes.
Okay, let me give you a brief. I went out last week and woke up with almost $1,000 receipt in my pocket. Now I was trying to figure out what the heck did I buy.
For $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I could barely remember what happened because I was having such a good time. But
okay, it answers one question.
Yeah, it really does answer.
What were you doing? I was having a good time.
Really having a good time. Yeah. But the thing is, I think if you just look at what inflation does, has done to money, and if you, comparing the example that you just gave, someone made someone made $500 back then,
yeah,
and they were able to take care of all these expenses, including having a family. Yeah. And right now, $1,000 is what you spend per night. And you can even like spend way more than that, depending on where you're going, especially in most of the urban areas.
Mm.
So I think one is inflation is a significant part of it, because now you can't picture someone being paid $500, especially in Namibian dollars. There's nothing much they can do about. What can you do with $500? That's not even enough for transport money.
That's even almost like a human rights violation.
Right. That must be human rights violation.
That's just bad. But, I mean, they could do it. They literally could live lives like that. You remember when I kept telling you about the story of when my mother told me that they had half a cent, a tiki, it was its name.
I'm still trying to rip my mind.
How do you get half a cent? But it was apparently also during the time when South Africa was trying to sort out its money situation,
mm-hmm,
because they still had the shilling left in the Namibian economy. It was the shilling. There was something known as a penny. A penny was literally a 1 cent or a 5 cent, literally.
Now, penny is not a name?
No. How much?
Sorry, penny.
No. But they literally had a penny. A penny was like a 5 cent or 1 cent. And you could buy sweets with these two coins.
I know, 5 cents.
There is no sweet in this planet that costs 1 cent today.
Not even 10 cents.
Not even 10 cents.
Yeah.
So, yeah, before we continue, guys, we'll quickly take a short break.
Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Get so much more.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg Real Good Chicken frozen mixed portions, only 99 Namibian dollars 99. And 2 kg Marathon Light Brown Sugar for a low 37 Namibian dollars 99. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Welcome back. It's just a minute past the hour of 5. You're still rolling or listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, Monday to Friday, we're here always with one topic after another, keeping you company from 4 to 6. Dwight.
So if we had to, if people knew, for example, what life was like for 50 years ago. Okay, let's first put it 40 years ago, then 50 years ago. And what money was back then? Because how many students today, Helmut, will tell you today that they've had a glimpse into the past of the kinds of currency that was present in Namibia, what you could buy with that currency? That is also information. And ultimately, how it...
Wait, you said something about shillings.
Yeah.
Like Kenya shillings?
Yeah, we had it. My mom told me there was a shilling here present in Namibian in back then, in this context of Namibia being administered by South Africa. But then they obviously, you know, had to also reform their currency situation because the rand was, the cent and the rand were the only two things, labels that you could know. But when she told us, I mean, okay, when they had the half a cent, the tiki, that was in the 50s to 60s. In that particular period, South Africa had to reform its currency situation because they had to standardize things. This is obviously as they continuously moved away from being a dominion of the UK to now becoming a full-on republic.
A sovereign nation.
Yeah, a sovereign nation. So they had to reform internally. If the listeners want to go read up on that, you guys will find it, a lot of information about it. But there was this particular transition period. Now, when that happened is obviously when the guys on with the Group Areas Act also started cooking up things in that regard, which is also information you got to know about. Now, obviously, historically and looking at today are obviously two different settings, two different contexts, but they also, in many scenarios, also speak to certain similar scenarios that are present today. For example, the scenario specifically, Amut, that the other thing that I keep asking the question about, why do some towns look like they're stuck in the past in Namibia?
Yeah.
And that should help many particular people across this country also stand up, look at the community and go like, that is true. Why do I hear Dwight here on the Home Run on Eagle FM mention something where the town that I've been living in for the rest of my life has been looking the same for so long? Mm-hmm. If you've ever had the opportunity, Amut, of looking at photos of cities in the U.S., what the city looked like before 1900.
And what it looks like now.
And what it looks like today. And what industrialization has done to the city versus what the city, what kind of an image and facade the city had back then. Amut, the American cities back then were beautiful. When I say beautiful, they had literally beautiful architecture. And then somewhere between 1922 or 1920, you know, when there was apparently a lot of cash happening, somewhere between 1920 and today, things just went ugly. When I say ugly, you sometimes hear some Americans, there's a YouTube channel I follow, what do they call it? Beautiful Streets or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's people, they are like town planning activists in the US who are trying to get back to a scenario where towns were functional for people. It's not just that you've got a road and various developments around it, mm-hmm. but no one wants to live in the town or no one wants to live in the city.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's largely because most of the urban areas are becoming more and more affordable, unaffordable by the day.
Yeah.
So it's just much easier to work in, but not live in.
Yeah, which is also part of the discussion based upon some of the. Okay, I don't access them anymore because I'm somehow now being locked out of accessing this particular resource. Yeah. But one of the research firms here, the investment research firms here in Namibia, here in Windhoek, they used to issue reports on Komas and Erongo housing permits or building permits or building or developments, construction developments. Mm. And it's a 3-page, 4-page, 5-page thing, Helmut, that just speaks about how many building permits were allowed or approved by the City of Windhoek Council and how many were rejected. What is the total value and the total value of approvals and the total value of of rejections. The rejections don't mean that you should never build. The rejections technically, in many scenarios, if you ever read that report, just explain that probably there was one or two things that is not allowable, or something was not submitted by the applicant to the council for this particular development. Mm-hmm. But when you go look at just Komas and Irongo submitting information to a financial institution who has to work with information, and it's only two regions out of 14 regions that collect such information. Namibians, technically, in their towns across the country, have to ask a question of, why are these sets of information not available? Do you know how lopsided the information is, Helmut, when you go look for information about, okay, so how many new homes are being built across the country, but you only find an investment house's own data, which is not even their own data, because the data is given to them by these town councils, or by these two particular geographic locations. And everyone will ask, so do all Namibians just live in Windhoek and in Irongo region? Which is a definite no. Which is a definite no. That's just primarily like, what? That's not even a million of Namibians. That is not even a third of Namibians. So with that particular position, how is it possible that the other information sets are not available? That the other local authorities, the other town councils, the other village councils, the other municipalities don't dispense information on a regular basis about how many building permits are approved, to what value, so on and so forth. Because we got to know how many residential buildings these are, how many business-oriented or meant for business purposes buildings these are. Now I've got to go and rely on the census mapping report that the NSA did just before the census itself, Helmut. And the census mapping report, Helmut, will tell you how many buildings are owned by the government in a town and how many are owned by private sector. And this is without looking at residential. This is just looking at places of business, places of work. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
I think the question of access to information being a good thing for a country, especially for ordinary citizens, being that's not much of a question. To basically sort of like spend, that will give us a headache in terms of deliberation. The main question will come to, the accessing to information now, because you can't just say, okay, you know what? Yes, access to information, human rights. Now let's just give everyone access to all information, because then, well, scammers will celebrate. Because
not just scammers, the security cluster will firstly go like, whoa, what on earth are you doing? Why do you want to give? What information?
All access to everyone. So then that means access to information is a human right, but it must be, that access must be done in the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take, for example, you can't just, storm into, into a bank and start asking for Helmut's information. Because the question they will ask you is, why do you need the information? And this and this and this and this are the papers you must show us. Well, first of all, if Helm did something wrong, you will have to acquire all the either court documents or police documents that prove that this person broke the law, and you need the information, his information that we have, to help you with that investigation.
Yeah.
So that is the right way to access that information. They're not telling you that you can't access the information. They're just telling you that there are procedures in place that will enable you to access that information.
Mm.
The same thing goes for schools. You can't just show up to a school and start demanding information left, right, and center. They'll ask you, okay, you want information of this child. What is your relationship with that child?
Yeah.
Yeah. because we can't give you, we can't go, just go around giving you information. And if you call, just call any office, you can call Eagle FM and start asking for Helmut or Dwight's information. They will ask you, why do you need that information?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this is a publicly available landline. This is the one that we have on our Eagle FM website, Villager, or you know, Facebook, on all our social media. So if you want to talk to them, just let us know so we can just bring them. Put you in touch with them. So having the information and saying that yes, it's access to information is a human right. That's one thing. So that also that's a good thing. But it now brings up a legislative discussion of, how do we make information accessible to everyone because it's their right, but also at the same time maintain the right to privacy.
Yeah.
Because access to information and the right to privacy, if they are more like two sides of the same coin. Yeah. So if you have too much access, if you give free access to information, the right to privacy goes out through the window.
Mm.
If you give too much private, you know, if you say that, you know, everyone has their right to their privacy on, you know, in all aspects of their lives, then access to information goes out through the window. So it's like balancing a seesaw. Now, how do you give information in a way that you still have the right to privacy still intact?
Mm.
Again, every time I look at, you know, I reach these conclusions, I start going, may I not find myself in public office? Because it's such a headache.
It is a headache, Helmut, because even with the discussions that the parliament guys are trying to have specifically, I heard just yesterday's particular parliament session, the one MP from IPC stood up and submitted a motion for actually a question to a minister about when is Namibia going to participate in the EITI
discussion. Boy.
And EITI is about, you know, access to information as well, which is also a particular thing that many Namibians are trying to understand, you know, what's actually going on here and what are some of the other things happening. And when we look at, okay, so that's what you call it, sort of like, I don't want to say high level. Request, because it's not high level. I mean, if any Namibian that can, you know, access the particular court, parliament sessions to try and understand what's being discussed is something else. But when you look at these kinds of conversations requesting, you know, let's have templates like open contracting or EITI, be things that help Namibia achieve its governance goals, mm-hmm. and transparency goals, then, you know, any person would tell you, okay, these sound like the best examples to make use of. But then you go and ask particular questions regarding, like, okay, so, for example, we would need, like, basic sets of information to be exposed under these particular, you know, two standards. To help with governance and transparency. And then in some cases, for example, like what the panel discussion last week highlighted was, we can't disclose how many people benefited from the resettlement farm program. And you're like, but it's a resource that sits right there and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You don't have to say, give names. You just have to say how many Namibians had.
Just the number of people.
That's it. And in which regions and mm-hmm. the sizes of the particular farms. That's it. That's all that you're not disclosing.
So five people benefited in the Kavango East region. These five people, got this number of combined hectares in terms of farmland that they were given.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're not saying, well, Helmut in this region and on this day, on this hour, in this second.
Or Helmut owns three resettlement farms. Name, address, contact number, email address, who he's married to, who his children.
ID number.
None of that. Just.
Mjolo previous history, I will murder you.
How many people, which vicinities, which regions, and what are the sizes of each of the properties? No. That those are apparently conversations that are that were not supposed to be held back in 2018 at the second land conference.
Yeah.
Then it's also a discussion in terms of what obviously the constitution allows.
Yeah.
Now an act can come along like the Access to Information Act, and then you obviously also have the constitution, and it's also scenarios of ultimately understanding to what extent can Namibians access information across the board? Now, in many cases, I immediately thought, Helmut, it was things like, let's for example say if your bank is doing something shifty, they double deducted you probably for a bank loan that you have, and you were like, why are you double deducting? And no one is explaining, but you see it's two different deductions, and you thought it was just one set deduction.
Yeah.
And when I say two different, I'm meaning it's two different quantities.
Yeah.
Not two different, two different numbers, sorry, two different amounts, not the same amount twice. And you go and query this, and it becomes this whole legal spat with your own particular personal bank. And these are things that happen. In many cases, the first thing people ask for is information.
Yeah.
They ask, what's this for? Why is it happening? And who are the parties related to this particular event?
Yeah.
And some cases, I didn't add it into the particular article as well that, formed part of this engagement as well. The one about, in some cases, how, because there was also a discussion there by one of the participants on the panel about the conduct in some cases that banks have had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, we have to be honest in certain scenarios as well in terms of also how this usually comes about. Other scenarios are also one based upon other functions of the economy. For example, like that lovely example I like using, the one that I found in commercial law about the shopkeeper that sold a can of beans that was expired, and they tried to shirk away from responsibility. And then the court told them, and this was an example from 1920 something, but you could probably see it was in a South African example, a case law. And the judge told the guy, listen, just because you run a shop does not mean you can run away from responsibility, because you need to know whether or not the products are fit for use or not, yeah, fit for consumption or not. And then that obviously meant it led to a standard being introduced in South Africa, mm-hmm, which is display the best before date.
Expiry date, yeah.
Yeah, the expiry date on products. That's why you guys see expiry dates so often in products. But it also translates into other things as well. For example, which has now become the bigger discussion about, for example, rain, and specifically the promise of rain.
Mm.
Now, I am currently sitting with something like 3 or 4 sets of information, Helmut, talking about the same thing. Because every time at the middle of the year, we start reaching this climate discussion towards the end. And every time, you would like to know, okay, what are the latest developments? So I'll start with one. The one development so far, which actually happened in April already, was that a whole bunch of lesser developed countries, along with the Netherlands and Brazil, Netherlands and Colombia, decided to host the first phasing out of fossil fuels conference.
Mm-hmm.
The first of its kind.
Phasing out conference.
Phasing out of fossil fuels.
They phasing are out as in they're practicing the, or they, the first time phasing they out, discussion.
Literally, and they literally invited the scientists, according to the guy in his video, this one guy in his video, the scientists who were told, no, you can't mention that part, but you can mention this part. No, that is too early for you to mention this. You'll spook people. Mention only this part of information.
Yeah.
They invited scientists, and guess what they told the people in the conference?
Yeah.
Switch off your cell phones, put it on flight mode, switch off your laptop, don't open up a laptop. We want honest feedback and honest contributions in a conference. No, I have I have the whole document. The document that was written by the Colombian government. You know, the post-conference document. I have the whole document. Because the guy in his video, he referenced all these sets of information, of literature. And the nice thing is that it was the first of such a conference that highlighted, you know what? The hard question has to be spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't host a conference of parties engagement in an oil-producing country like the UAE or like the – what was the desertific – the one of 2024, the desertification COP that was in Saudi Arabia.
COP 16, yeah.
Yeah, in Saudi Arabia. You don't host a desertification conference of parties with an oil-producing country as well. Even though the guys are part of the UN, obviously, yeah, you know, everybody has an equal chance to host a UN event. But the concern...
That makes sense. Look, the UN headquarters is in New York. Yeah.
Which is currently...
The organization is about peace and security.
The same country that's...
The country that's bombing most countries across the, you know, across the planet, and everyone is like...
Yeah. Oh, they decided to switch the on button again earlier today.
On Iran.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the headquarters of the UN is.
Of the UN is.
Yep.
So when obviously the contradictions, you know, in global politics is...
I know, right? Yeah.
It's wild.
Wild.
And obvious. And it's in your face telling you, yeah, things are happening, not like we are saying.
You know, my favorite
happening
part.
What we are not saying.
You know, my favorite part is a bunch of guys that colonized us are now here telling us about human rights. I'm looking at them going like, are you sure, man? Seriously? Human rights, huh?
Yeah.
You are going to teach me about human rights. Shouldn't that be the other way around?
I mean, in some cases, for example, like the anti-slavery discussion. Vote...
And then when the voting comes, you abstain.
Yeah. Like the anti-slavery discussion, which was... very peculiar, specifically from the EU perspective.
Yeah.
It highlighted one of the major contrasts specifically of what's going on. Because in the EU's, I think it's in the Global Gateway thing as well, they are championing human rights protections as well.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because who are we doing everything on this planet for? We're doing it for us, the humans. Because you can't go and say I'm doing it for my company, and everyone will ask you, but your company is not alive, dude.
That you know, there's something I believe. I'm not sure if it was John Stewart of Bilma who said. He was talking about, you know, he made a skit on some environmentalists that were protesting about, you know, the protection of the environment, let's do anything we can to save the environment. One of the things that they kept pointing out was that, don't have kids to save the environment. The question he asked was like, if we can't have kids so we can save the environment, who the heck are we saving the environment for?
Exactly.
Okay, look.
Who are we saving?
Who are you saving the environment for?
Exactly. It's a very good and honest question to ask.
Because it sounds nuts when you think of it like that. Now, and look, the contradiction, I think this is where it becomes very important to know how the world basically works, especially in the world of geopolitics, because it's the most influential when it comes to information dissemination.
Mm.
But much of the information are based on half truth. Take the whole idea of let's just make meat in the lab so we can reduce the number of cattle we have to save the environment.
Mm.
I'm all for that idea, except the people that are telling me that are flying around in private jets.
Mm.
So you're telling me that your private jet spewing all the carbon monoxide in the air and all other dangerous gases is not the problem, but my cow is.
Because your cow farts too much.
Now, let's just compare my cow's annual carbon emission to your private jet's carbon emission per trip. And then you'll realize that I should be telling you about carbon emission, not the other way around.
And the jet flies a lot closer to the atmosphere where the impact supposedly is, while your cattle, yeah, five guys are standing there, three are standing over there, uh-huh. Everybody's just, you know, doing their own thing there on your farm. And the unfortunate thing is you're being told, yeah, no, you've still got too many cattle.
It's ridiculous.
No, it is. It look, if you look at cattle, the cattle populations that are exported by countries like Argentina, Brazil, Australia, the US, sure, you know, those are big red meat exporting nations. But then you come to old little Namibia and now you want to tell a farmer out there in the bush, you know, Yamut, you and your 10 cattle are just too much. You and your 10 cattle, you're like, what is this person saying?
Okay, the language is the one that I just love the language used in some of these discussions, because that's where a lot of questions basically begins to pop up. Hmm. Let's face just the reality on the ground here. There is no such a thing as zero carbon emission.
No, there isn't.
There is no such
thing. Volcanoes, literally, if one volcanic eruption happens.
Oh boy, that's terrible.
I mean, it's even beyond some of the particular goals.
Well, take the cars, for example.
Yeah.
You'll just see a car that says 0% emission. It has plastic parts. That's fossil fuel. When you say 0% emission, mm-hmm. what on earth are you talking about? The tires are plastic. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is made out of, the chassis is made out of metal, which had to be mined by mining earth-moving machines. Mm-hmm. Emission right there. Mm-hmm. So we have made, unless you tell me that zero emission starts from when the car is bought, mm-hmm. not from when it's manufactured, which will give us a very terrible description of what emission is. Mm. Because, if that's the case, then let's leave out, my cow's carbon emission when it's alive. When it's turned into beef, that's also 0% emission.
When it's alive.
Yeah. I love the language game. But the thing is, information is going to come straight up to access to information.
Mm.
And you want to make it, obviously, if it's a human right, you want to make it available to everyone.
Mm.
And if you want to make it available to everyone, you now have to go on an education spree to educate people, to tell them that, you know what, yes, you can acquire information on pretty much anything or most of the things that you want.
Mm.
But you have got to follow procedure. And now we live in a world of technology.
Yeah, it's also about if the procedures are known.
That's the thing, but the procedures have to be explained in the legislations, like your Access to Information Act. And we've seen this with the GDPR. It basically draws an excellent template of, you know what, you can have access to information, but this and this is how you should do it.
Mm.
Commercial break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue. It's 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's discussion is based on access to information being a human right. First, it starts with a very interesting question. Is access to information a human right? Which, if you... All you just need is a short Google search, and you can find a lot of sources that will basically point you in the direction of yes. And that's the first thing I did this morning when I just went through a bunch of literature coming out of the United Nations, UNESCO, and just here at home locally, all which points to how important how important access to information is. So that brings up the discussion of how do you make this access to information in a controllable way, in a way that it's not a chaotic way you have everyone accessing everyone's information, including private information, which will open up a whole can of worms when it comes to the right to privacy. So it becomes about balancing a seesaw between giving everyone giving people their right the right to exercise their right, which is in this case access to information, and also at the same time respecting theirs and everyone else privacy, right to privacy. So there are two things that pops up here. We all know that the right to privacy, that is a human right, the right to privacy. Now, access to information, from the look of things, it's painting all kinds of good pictures on a national and international level that access to information is a human right. So if you have access to information being a human right, and the right to privacy also being a human right, those two are more like... opposites of one another. Access to information means giving people the right to access the information they want or need. The right to privacy means making sure that people have the right to keep the information they wish to keep private. And we already have this as part of our constitution, for example. The Bill of Rights, which is Chapter 3 of our of the Namibian Constitution, has all the rights associated to natural persons for the most part, and the right to privacy is one of those rights, that you have the right to have all the information that you don't wish to share, like your ID number and your banking details, for example, your health information. All those are your right. Those fall within your right of, those are your private information. You can share them only if you wish, but if they are made public against your will, that is a violation of your right to privacy. So now you have two interesting points of discussions to have here. So that's where a regulation now becomes very important, because now you have to balance the seesaw of maintaining people's right to privacy and also giving the very same people access to the information they need. And different people need access to different information. And take for example, if someone let's go back to my bank example. If the authorities shows up to You know, the authorities shows up to my doctor and start demanding my health information. The doctor is obviously going to ask a lot of relevant questions like, do you have any legal ways of basically doing this? Like, if you can give me a court warrant, if you can give me court or police documents that are showing just how relevant that information is, I'm shielding my client. What I want is when my client comes asking questions about how the police or anyone else who came asking for my information, how they got hold that information, I will be able to explain my way out of that. Because if I just share it with you willy-nilly and they cast and the owner of that information comes asking, how did those people get the information that only you could have gotten your hands on, only you have basically, then that would be very difficult to explain. So, and the GDPR, the GDPR that is, look at it as a Bible for access to information, or more like data protection, basically. A Bible of data protection, because it's a template document coming out of the European Union, and what it basically does is that template has data acquisition, storage, and disposal, in a nutshell. How to collect information. And this is not collecting information in any nefarious way. When you are registering, when you go to the hospital, for example, you have to give some of your information, like what problems are you having. And you have to give your health passport. They will ask your name, maybe your age, your ID number, and all those things. All this information that you are providing, that health facility is collecting a data. It's collecting your information. And when they give you all those meds, whatever type of medication that they give you, they also keep a copy of basically, all the details that they have collected, including the problems that you went complaining with, and the medication that they prescribed for that problem. They have that. So anyone that will go looking for that information now must follow the procedure. Take, for example, you went to the hospital and that hospital was able to gather all that information they did, including the problem that you have and the medication that they gave you. Now, imagine if a doctor just showed up at your house and started telling you that, you know what, I think you have a headache. And now I want to know your name, ID number, age, and everything. And then just hand that information. You'll tell them, no, first of all, I don't have a headache, but I'm about to have one thanks to this conversation. Collection of information, storage of information, sharing of information, and disposal of information. That basically summarizes, that's what makes the GDPR, that's the General Data Protection Regulation, for me, and a very interesting document, because it can, you know, it's a very large document that can be split in basically just four categories. And the four categories that the GDPR focus on is, one, how to collect information; two, how to store the collected information; three, how to share, basically, one, the right way to collect information; two, the right way to store information; three, the right way to share information; and four, the right way to dispose information. When you look at it from that angle, especially in terms of information or data, collection, storage, sharing, and disposal, it's going to start an interesting discussion here in Namibia. A couple of days ago, I saw an article on one of the Namibian media houses on social media, where there was a very nice picture of a pile of a pile of files, like hard copy files, and the files that have been sort of like that should be investigated and prosecuted.
Is that at the police stage, Helmut, or at the?
I'm not sure if that was a police stage or now the Ministry of Justice stage or the court stage. because that was one heck of a pile. And I was like, you know what? One good reason to be a law-abiding citizen. Now imagine your file being one of the in that pile, and you are just sitting there chilling, and you haven't
forgotten even in the police cell even.
You don't remember when last time you picked soap, which is not a good idea. So now, and believe me, become a law-abiding citizen today.
Stay a law-abiding citizen, guys. Yeah, just stay it.
Stay. Yeah. So. I think once you establish the very apparent reality from just the two sources that I referenced in the beginning from CREN, UN, and UNESCO, that yes, access to information is that important, especially in relations to governance, then that means if you are in public office, you will now be, especially if you are in if you're in parliament, you'll now be faced with one of the ginormous tasks of trying to draft up the right regulations on how to make sure that you have people, you know, you have citizens, all 3 million of them. You want to give them that right to exercise their right of accessing information.
Yeah.
And also, you know, and also protect their right to privacy all at once.
Yeah.
That must be fun being a parliamentarian.
Well, they're currently, you know, doing their thing, Helmut.
Yeah, and if you ask me, GDPR is awesome. Very, very, very awesome.
No, yeah, it definitely is an awesome piece of document. It's obviously just, do other territories around the world see the same particular benefit? In terms of having something so straightforward, something so holistic, being present for everybody to know, meaning customers and citizens alike, and being able to literally say, hey, listen, if you're a country, for example, like Namibia, let's try and do the same thing. You remember the question that I asked the people from the Ministry of ICT in terms of why couldn't we just copy and paste what the GDPR did, and then I was given the response of, no, Namibia has its own identity and its own sovereignty and its own laws and its own... I'm not saying copy and paste word for word. I'm not saying commit plagiarism. I'm not saying commit plagiarism. I'm just asking...
You're the edit genius.
Couldn't we just do literally the exact same thing? That's all.
Okay, you know why the whole access to information being a human right becomes a very interesting discussion to have, especially right now in Namibia?
Why?
Open contracting, AITI.
Definitely.
Because that info, you know, the level of transparency brought about by AITI,
yeah,
falls in the category of a lot of information that people in Namibia would like to access, especially in the extractive industry.
Yeah.
We just want to know what's going on. That's it.
I specifically...
There are a lot of people... There could be a lot of people that just don't care, but there are those of us that are very interested.
I mean, just before we stepped in, Helmut, there was an MP that stood up there in Parliament. Here in our studio, we've got the National Assembly session ongoing, where some of our colleagues are actually laughing at some of the contributions being given by said particular parliamentarians. But before I stepped in here, that was just before their recess. I think their recess was literally just before we came into the studio, Helmut.
Yeah.
Ne? And the first session of the National Assembly engagements there was one of the MPs get up and reads out it's now a questions session. They submit questions and they seek a response by next mix. This is obviously to give the minister from the cabinet the opportunity to go and collect information from his ministry and then bring it back.
Yeah.
And then come and deliver the response. The one MP, won't mention names, gets up and says, why can't, we don't know how much money mining companies make, which is what you highlighted, which would be a nice thing for everybody to know.
Yeah.
And then the next motivation the MP gives is, why can't these mining companies build schools and hospitals? I'm like, what?
What?
Exactly, Albert. It's one of the comments why I say, it's one of the reasons why I make the comment of always, we've got to know the kind of person we are voting into at a high level situation.
Okay, why mining companies are not building schools as
schools and hospitals.
Schools and hospitals as a dedicated task or part of their
but it doesn't even have to be part of their CSR.
Because that's really specific.
Their CSR is usually immediately near to the employees, the welfare that a company has in many cases, that you would assume is usually to the employees. For example, I'll give an example, and this is a range of examples. In some cases, the children of these employees can access like bursary programs, né? Mm-hmm. Or the, for like what I saw there in Russia, that mining company, the children of the miners got a state of the, do you remember the school that I came and told you about? The school that had design and robotics and computing and all that as subjects. And the what happened was that the old school building burnt down. It literally, it was a catastrophe in this small village town. And the mining company decided, you know what, let's rebuild, let's build a new one right opposite the old ruins. And the school, the whole school population just moves in. New playing field, new sports field, new facilities, everything. Brand spanking new. And this is an SOE that did this. Not a private company. An SOE did this. So, like I said, in many templates that you see, the CSR is, or the welfare, is usually for the immediate societal contingent that is affiliated to the company. So, company employees. Company employee children, company employee, let's say where they live, let's say it's a town. It's usually that in that immediate vicinity. Now, we have a pretty broad-based question that says, why can't these companies build schools and hospitals? You're like, no.
That needs elaborating, but because now, what do you mean?
Where is your regional government? Where is your local authority? Why are they not standing up and answering that question? Now, this question—that's
one of those questions that were asked that will require an answer come next week.
I can read you the question even. Here on the on the Parliament WhatsApp page, the National Assembly guys, they, when the question is tabled, then they send us a copy, ask the media. Where's the guy?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the answer of that question, though, because I'll just be here going.
Motion supporting document. Okay, no, this is someone else. So, yeah, it still has to come through, because I see the last document that was shared, and there has been a whole bunch of discourse happening in between. It was literally an whole hour ago. No? It was basically a whole 20 minutes that way. Before that, it was a whole 20, 30, 40 minutes before it, so the other documents still have to come.
I mean, that's why I'm saying, look, it's an interesting question if it's explained in details as to, you know, because it does really bring up a lot of questions like, what do you mean mines must now build, build schools and hospitals? Are you talking about social corporate responsibility or are you talking about something else? So that explainer would clarify, would they actually answer a lot of questions, because there is no way an extractive, you know, entity will just pop up out of the blue and start setting up stuff. Well, they can, but let's face it, do they want to?
I don't even think it's sometimes a question of do they want to, Helmut, because if we have a very ugly, which is a very good example, I call it ugly.
Yeah, look, the thing is, it's about procedures here, right? Because one thing we know is that, take, for example, if there's any, you know, extractive industry, a company, a based company, and it wants to build a school, a hospital, for the public, it will have to go through the, you know, the line ministry of that, you know, of that facility. Take, for example, through the Ministry of, you know, the Ministry of Works or Ministry of Education if it's a school, or Ministry of Works, Ministry of Health if it's a hospital and all that. Now, it will be very interesting to know. Now, is that going to be a donation, or how is, because there must be an explanation. That's what I would just be interested to know.
Mm.
Yeah, because them just running around building them. It's not that I would hate the physical infrastructure. It would be a very awesome one. But what type of initiative would that be? That's what, that's just my curiosity going wild.
And the example I wanted to highlight just before you gave that explanation. The reason why I called it ugly is because it makes any other corporate look bad. But it's actually one of the best CSR projects in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
The best, obviously, is that one that Bietekul's grain farm.
Yeah.
In Otjotontjuba region.
Yeah.
Don't worry, if you're from Bietekul, guys, I'm not calling your project ugly. I'm just saying you're making other people look ugly, look bad. Other companies who can do more.
And they're not doing.
Well, for us also to say, Amut, that they're not, we have to prove.
They're not doing anything similar?
Yeah. Or to okay. such a magnitude, or to such a, into okay. such a depth.
Okay, what if that weed farm in Otjotontjuba was also CSR, but...
I first wanted to go, please.
But, well, it was not CSR according to the Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security.
Look, if you were from that other, questionable faith that relies on said particular herb or inducement of herb to play a pivotal part, I don't know. I really don't know. First and foremost, the followers of said particular faith, they're pretty resourceful in supply. So,
yeah.
I don't think that farm would have been a feature of CSR, Helmut. I really don't think so.
Next thing you know, the whole... look, if that was legal, the next thing you know, the whole of Otjotontjuba is having it, yeah. I am a counselor, so... But we're going to get beaten up today.
Do you know what would have been the worst? Probably. Yeah. If those same counselors told the whole Otjotontjuba region, stop eating meat.
Yeah, and...
It's against my religious... Right? Well, okay.
Look... I would pay a lot, if it went to that, I would pay a lot of money to listen to Otjotontjuba guys singing the Namibian national anthem with a Jamaican accent. That would be fun.
Well, yeah, look, acting classes, I don't, if there's someone out there, there's an opportunity to give people acting classes in the following particular possible lines of work or employment.
We business. Bring our problems to the Lord. Bring my problems to Jah. That's a nice one.
Well, I almost started singing a Bob Marley song.
Someone
they show up for the council meeting. We're jamming.
Look, there are two places I don't think I can go to church on this planet.
Yeah.
Nigeria and Jamaica.
Yeah.
Look, first of all, I got much of the, of pidgin English through Nigerian movies, mostly from, from the late Sam Loco and the late John Okafor.
Mm.
So when I hear someone speaking, pidgin English, the first thing that comes in my head is those two.
Mm.
And Akina Ukwa, Akina na Ukwafo. Those are, it's just sarcasm that pops up.
Mm.
And 2016-17, I worked with two Nigerians in Sumwe. It took me a while to get used to that English because every time they started speaking, I started laughing.
Mm.
And so I can't imagine.
As long as you didn't drink with them.
I can't imagine sitting there in church and listening to someone preaching in that language. I'll just start laughing. And Jamaican, especially Patois, is just, I would just assume the preacher is high on weed. That's because one of the biggest stereotypes associated with patwa is that everyone is weed smoker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you guys also have it. You know, we're sharing information about that as well, just for, you know, public safety concerns. Just.
Yeah, it's a beautiful island.
Just.
With beautiful culture and beautiful music.
Just so that you know.
Yeah.
But getting back to discussions about information.
Yeah.
So far, Helmut, what I've appreciated in the two years that we've done, I think up until now, we've been doing Home Run for 2 years together, right? Since 2024.
Man, 2 years already?
Yeah, I think we started March or February 2024.
Jeez.
So in this particular period now, and in the, you know, my career specifically as you know, in broadcasting, the information I've appreciated the most specifically holistically about Namibia has been some of the standing committee reports, because the standing committee guys, the MPs themselves, obviously with their party or affiliations, you know, which could potentially muddle a picture about the true scope of the field visits and the exercises and the subject matter that they tried to investigate and then compile their reports on. And even though those reports are very easy to digest, very easy to read, very easy in some cases to access, there is always the scenario that some of that reports can also be somewhat watered down, or it could show in some cases a bias. But I've actually learned a lot more than from, in some cases, an article in a media platform here in Namibia. Those guys give you everything. Yes, the four MPs that went with, one was wearing a white shirt, the other one a red shirt, the other one a flower shirt, which was dubious. You know, it's information you don't need, but it's not to say that that kind of information is there. It's just, in some cases, you get a lot of information being given to you that describes a situation that Namibians are trying to understand, which is, in some cases, are not answered by the very media houses that are supposed to answer the basic questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why did this happen? How did this happen? Who are the participants? And since when? You know, just things like that. Just answering those basic stuff. The reports that I've not appreciated the most. Okay, let me say, the lack of reports, or the reports I wished to have seen, né, in our time together, Helmut, are potentially reports that don't come from the ministries. These are reports like crime statistics in some cases, not crime reports, crime statistics.
Crime statistics.
Literally taking in consideration that the tourism sector is actually a sector for Namibia. It's a whole industry. Assessing that, they're not doing it. But we are easy to jump to mining. We're easy to jump to fishing.
Mm-hmm. And even at that,
we're and still even terrible. With fishing, we're not even reporting on data and on information. So there's a whole bunch of things that I would have appreciated the entities that are supposed to be generating the information basically dispenses it, versus the one entity who in some cases is handicapped on the information they can access is actually outperforming many of these ministries itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the ministry guys get paid salaries year month in, month out. They go to office and to work day in, day out. Some of you know them, are married to them, are family to them and stuff. You see that person go to the office this morning, come back at 5, and if you ever ask them, how was your work, him or her, listen to the answer. Ask them, did they really make a change in the Namibian landscape? Okay, I'm not saying go and start a fight now at home. Please, guys. Please. I'm not saying that. It's just a position to highlight there. But yeah. But before we continue, we'll quickly take a short break, guys, and come back right after that. This is the Velvice University notice of the NQA's approval for the expansion of scope. Velvice University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority, NQA Council, has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications, which are offered through full-time blended learning modes at our university. These are the Bachelor of Laws Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, yes, in short, access to information, important, but access to the right information. Access to the right information.
But it's also a question, Ahmed, of we have to make it a habit to dispense and make information available. It's not just about calling us the media, Yakakir. Yes, please, we've got this. Let me cite this one particular example why I say that. And it's not to complain, but it's just a bit weird.
Okay.
Earlier today, our colleague David went to the National Planning Commission. They had a thing there. But if you read sort of like the invite itself, it was a particular, the event is technically about the strategic plan, the launch of the strategic plan for the National Planning Commission. Now, anyone would think the NDP6 is technically the strategic plan for the National Planning Commission. Not having a secondary thing to the main thing. But anyway, I mean, I don't work there. I'm not affiliated with the NDP to the NPC. But then yesterday, during the course of the day, one of the communications people from the National Planning Commission then posts on the same group to us, the media, saying, at the same event of launching the strategic plan will also be the unveiling of a report, Helmut, about Namibia's particular rate of implementation, about the conversation we had the other day about the AFCFTA. You remember the rate of Africa, of continental integration. That discussion we had last week.
Yeah.
Not last week, the week before, I think. Remember that conversation? Mm. It's specifically that conversation and the one that we had, I think, yesterday or last week. Monday was education, I think. Yesterday was GMO, which is also linked in a way. It was the Tuesday one. Tuesday conversation we had. And there was also one specific conversation last week also highlighting this African... Yes, it was the AU and the regional economic zones of the continent. That specific, the RECs, regional economic...
Africa's integration for internal trade.
Exactly.
Because most of our trade, and that's the whole continent, is more outside trade. Each and every African country trades more with a non-African country than it does with
itself, with its neighbors.
Yeah, so what we want is to beef up. I think the exact word that was used there was intra-Africa trade.
Yeah, intra-Africa. Yeah. Literally, this report, Helmut. Namibia's rate
of implementation.
Literally, this report. Now, why could this report not have been sort of like the central focus point instead of a strategic plan announcement?
Where's that report?
We got it just today.
Oh.
I can send it to you later on. Oh, but at the heart of this, when you look at it, to invite the media for your strategic plan launch, all the media is just like, what are we coming here for? And then as an appetizer, you tell us, hey, there's this lovely report that will also, unveil, which shows Namibia's rate of adoption or rate of integration or rate of implementation of the AFCFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And then any person would say, of course we want to be there for that thing. So yeah, that is the crux, the gist.
Jeez.
That's the kind of information we need, not knowing about strategic plans for ministry.
Very important strategic plan. As long as we have a strategy and plan, you know.
It's like the one time I said, I told the one person, when I went to the Ministry of Health's customer service charter back in 2024, I sat there thinking, no, it was literally at the start of last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the start of last year, just before the new cabinet got sworn in, and it was still Minister Shangula. And the minister is now standing there and telling all these, because it's a Ministry of Health thing, all these Ministry of Health people, remember that we are there to work for the public. I sit there asking myself, so are we saying that there are literally people that don't know they need to work? They're working for us? Us? Who are you working for then?
The Namibian public. 6 minutes. 6 minutes into the hour of six. That brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, which will be Friday, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM, with your favorite duo and your favorite drive time show. Until tomorrow, stay tuned for... It's Thursday, so it's a Business with Roy, Business with an Economic segment. They'll have to know who to murder to bring it up the next segment.
On that note, guys, stay tuned. We'll see each other again, same time, same place.